Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello everybody, and welcome to our podcast again this afternoon. In today's segment, we will be talking with Mr. Paul Hilson of Elko. They are a mobile app, product-focused app development company. They're based out of Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Chicago, Illinois. Paul, thank you very much for your time this afternoon, and let's go ahead and get started, please.
All right, sounds good.
Paul, I've been reading up on your bio. I did a little bit of background snooping on you. I didn't do any background checks or nothing like that, but just did a little bit of research on Google and LinkedIn. And you've got quite an interesting background. I believe you started mechanical engineering and you kind of went to software development. Can you provide just like a background about your bio and how you actually got started where you are at today with Elko?
For sure. So, like you said, I definitely started out as an engineer, and at a certain point in time, it wasn't cutting it for me. So I kind of did what a lot of the other engineers considered turning to the dark side and went over to the software world. Started out as a developer, and pretty quickly the companies I worked for realized I was more social. I didn't like spending time at my computer. So they moved me kind of more into the program management of different products that we developed for other companies. And, you know, we'll kind of talk about this a little bit more, but I got to a point where, you know, there seemed like we were spending a lot of time on building out applications, doing a lot of basic things that really wasn't adding value to the clients. And so after some time, I got a little bit disillusioned by that, and I thought there could be a better way than this. So we started up Elko to try and address some of those issues.
Okay. Now, Paul, I understand that you take mobile app development slightly different than most. Now, I know I've worked with some mobile app developers, and I've written some stuff on mobile app development, especially when it comes to, like, you know, using APIs and all that. But what stands out from the rest? There's so many mobile app developers out there. What makes you different from everybody else in the crowd?
Right. So, first thing I should mention, too, is we definitely do mobile app development, but we also do web app development and any kind of custom software development. So we run the gamut there. But you know what's different about us is that we have a tool that we built out called the Elko App Builder, where, kind of like I said before, there's a lot of similar things that every application will need to be a full-fledged product, I guess you could say. So instead of spending the weeks or sometimes even the months to spin up the infrastructure, set up your pipelines, kind of do all that heavy lifting, we built out a tool that, you know, within you click a few buttons and within 10, 15 minutes, you have a fully operational application. And what that means for us and for our clients is that instead of spending that time and sometimes more importantly, the client's money on doing those basic things, we are just spending our attention and our focus on just filling out the unique features that make their products unique to them.
Now, what's the benefit of this for, say, for a company that comes to you with an app idea? I know that mobile app development can take a while, you know, especially when you're trying to test the security of that source code. You know, you got to bring it to market, you got to sandbox it, you got to make it appealing. From a UI UX standpoint, there's so many things to take into consideration. What is the benefit of this more or less automated process for your clients and a new prospect that comes to you?
Sure. So I guess I can start with a story here where when I was a consultant working at a major firm, we were building out this brand new platform for them. And it got to a point where the DevOps team was so overburdened that developers were ready to go, ready to start making these features. But the DevOps team had so many other things that they had to focus on, putting out different fires. And it got to a point where we just weren't making good progress. And on top of that, they designed a nice architectural platform. The platform was nicely architected for their purpose, which they spent months doing. But it wasn't a unique one per se. There wasn't anything special about it. It was solid, but it wasn't special. And to architect that to spin up the infrastructure just so developers could get a hands-on keyboard and start doing work took something like over 6 months and ran them over $1 million. So after experiencing that,
wow,
you know, we thought, yeah, that there's just so much friction there, right? And so we thought, how do you reduce that friction? And so what we built this platform kind of with that in mind, right? That how do you build an enterprise grade level product without having to spend $1 million on it? So for that client specifically, instead of spending 6 months, you spend 10 minutes, maybe a day with our platform to build that up. So that's an enterprise example. Now, for someone who's, we also love working with entrepreneurs. So someone who has a fun mobile app idea that it's not, you know, subject to like HIPAA regulations or anything like that. What we have been able to do is, instead of, again, spending all that time on spinning up those basics and having to charge them that money, we've saved, let me put it this way. We have gotten to a point with a few of our products that for MVP, we can go from idea with an app into the app store in just 2 weeks.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's excellent. So now I've written, as I've said to you before, I'm in my blogs and some of the other pieces I've written for clients, I've written about mobile app development, especially from a security standpoint. I know that, you know, app development, you know, as I said before, mobile app development can be a laborious, painstaking process. But I know that developers, they like to make use of APIs, third-party plugins to help kind of speed up the process to keep the mobile app project under budget and to deliver it on time or even before time, before the client's expectations. But can you run into more security issues with automated solutions if you're not looking at them on a client by client or project by project basis? Or what's the fundamental question is, what protocols do you have in place to make sure that the source code that you're using or automatically creating is secure to begin with? That's really what I'm trying to get at.
Right. And I love that you talked about we're under some time pressure, kind of, right, that you want to get these features out as fast as you can. And that's a lot of times the name of the game, right? And a lot of this is, how do I go from idea into market as fast as I can, right? And when you do that, security kind of takes a backseat to that, right? We've definitely worked at clients where it was, you got something into production and we had no log aggregation, we had no monitoring, we didn't even have security scanning to a point that,
well,
we didn't really know, like, we were so focused, they were so focused on getting something out there that security and all those other things kind of were an afterthought, right? So with the Elko App Builder and how we do things at Elko, we kind of want to flip that on its head to say, hey, we know, right? You could, if you had all the time and money, you would absolutely want to do that up front. So what we do instead is we build all that in as a default. You don't have to worry about, having to add this in yourself. These items are by default added in. And what I kind of mean by that is when we provision, well, let me take a step back. Yes, a lot of times those places can be, or when you want to automate things, can be insecure, but it is absolutely the exact opposite of what we do here. We think of security in two aspects, right? You need to start secure, and then you need to make sure your product stays secure. Right? That's kind of the two. If you can cover those two bases, you're good to go. So things like for starting secure, you're going to want to do secured networking. So we have the monitoring, alerting, subnet segmentation all built in. Basic things like automated provision of secrets management, and even, making sure that your data at rest or data in motion is all encrypted. Those really basic fundamental things are all things that are, built in. And it, But the point really there being, it's not enough just to start out the cure. You need to make sure you stay that way, because constantly your products are changing. If you're not growing, you're dying, right? So what we do to ensure our product stays secure is we make sure that we have built into our pipelines whenever you deploy a lot of tools that will do scanning on your code, both statically and dynamically, to either make sure you're not coding in some vulnerabilities, hard coding in credentials, and as well they do some dynamic scanning to make sure that you're, you know, basically pen testing, penetration testing your product to make sure it's up to snuff.
Okay, excellent. Now, what kind of best practices to implement as a part of the ELCO application building process? Do you use any frameworks like from NIST, or do you use anything from OWASP? Have you kind of concocted your own best practices, or what have you in that regard?
Right. So my my favorite thing here is kind of the and what a lot of my favorite thing here is our pipeline, right? My kind of the golden template pipeline that comes default with any product that we build out. There's going to be absolutely so there's absolutely going to be OWASP in there. OWASP app is the one that we primarily use here when it comes to SonarQube. When it comes to scanning. So not only doing the static code analysis before even deploying to an environment, but we are doing that using the OWASP again to do some dynamic scanning once you're deployed into either your dev staging or even prod.
Okay. Now, have you seen any cases where, you know, you may have implemented some best practices, but it just has not gone through, it's like backfired on you? And how do you deal with it?
Sure. So, your question is, you know, has there been any case studies or things that you've seen out there that this was kind of not implemented as well?
Right. Like, where have you seen, like, okay, companies try to implement best standards, security standards for their mobile app development, but it sometimes just has not worked. Have you come across anything like that, or have you worked with other companies to try to help them improve their processes in that regard?
Right. So, for us, what we do is we try to put up, kind of like we were talking about with that pipeline and with scanning, is we put up programmatic guardrails. So if OWASP, right, detects any kind of vulnerability, you're not allowed to pass that gate and to go on to the next environment. You are stopped there, and we're giving developers that feedback early and often. And then that's just something that's, I suppose, having that, those guardrails, and not just guardrails, but programmatic ones, are really, really, really big factors here. One such example would be, I think it was just last month that the Babylon Health data breach. Basically, what happened was that people could see other people's recordings of other health consultations. If I was logged in, I could potentially look at what my neighbor was talking to his doctor about. And that's really the difference between focusing on authentication versus authority, right? That, you need to, just because you're authenticated into the app doesn't mean you have the authority to be able to see other things. And especially when it comes to HIPAA, I'm actually a little bit surprised this was able to happen, because you, as part of HIPAA compliance, need to prove that as a user, you only have the authority to see your own items, and those are constant audits going on. So absolutely, as part of, to try and prevent something like that, you would have the logs and the proof showing that, hey, this user is only able to see their own items, and the external auditor should be able to take you up on that and prove that that is the case.
Okay, excellent. Now, one of the more high-profile stories, and I've seen across these headlines, are the dating apps, you know, like eHarmony, Match.com, Christian Mingle, Cupid, you know, whatever's out there. You know, they've been breached with, you know, with security issues, so forth, so forth. What have you done differently there? I mean, do you have clients in this marketplace?
We do have some, yes. And this is kind of goes back to the secure by default. If you're referring to what I think you are, this might have been, you know, that they allowed their Amazon's S3 buckets to be publicly accessible.
Right.
So I think it was like nearly a terabyte of conversations, photos, audio that they exposed for the whole world to see what was going on there. And what really should have happened, what we do is by default, everything is locked down, right? And that's going to go a long ways for you. You have to explicitly say, I want to flip this switch to have it be open to the world, right? In order to change that. And really the other thing that could have prevented that was, again, going back to the OAuth app, you can do these automated testings to make sure that, that's more of like a pen testing, right? That you can't get to certain areas of data from the outside internet. So in our world, yes, we would expect a developer, if that to come up, that again, those guardrails come up to say, hey, you cannot deploy this to a high level environment. You need to stop, go back and change this.
Okay. Now, just one question here. Do you actually do your own penetration testing for these mobile apps that you've created, or do you do like threat hunting and pen testing, or how do you test more beyond than just what you typically deploy for security best practices, or do your clients even ask you if you can do pen testing after the fact?
Good question. So that is, we'll do the kind of the automated pen testing provided by OAuth. But when you want to talk about more HIPAA compliance, we have trusted third parties do that for us. So we are very confident that we are able to secure it and align with the HIPAA compliance, but you are dealing with PHI at that point. So to make sure that all the ducks in the row, that everything is working really as expected there, we put that out there to our third-party trusted companies that will pen test and try to – it's their job to try and prove or to try and break what we have, right? So for a client, that gives them a high degree of confidence knowing that you have multiple independent qualified parties all verifying that this is going to be HIPAA compliant.
Okay.
And so, to answer your question, I really only see that with HIPAA. With other applications, I do not see any kind of request to have independent individuals doing any kind of pen testing.
Wow, okay. Well, that's kind of unusual because the pen testers I know, I mean, they say, we got client mobile app clients, they want their stuff pen tested. So, okay, cool. So now,
this could be a matter of who you're dealing with, right? There's going to be, there's for sure going to be people who have some sensitive data there that they're concerned about.
Right.
And if that's the case, for sure, other people, basically, I should say we do run the gamut of that one as well, but it's been more in the healthcare world that we've kind of focused on that.
Well, now, do you think you'll see an increase in trend for pen testing because of the GDPR and CCPA? I know that with COVID-19 right now that there have been a little bit more lax in their enforcement standards, but if once things start to pick up more in the air and the enforcement side, you think you're going to see more requests for pen testing so that companies will come into compliance with those two pieces of legislation?
You know, this might be controversial a little bit, but everything in that regulation you should have been doing anyway in the first place. That was kind of table stakes. If you weren't, if you have an application out there that wasn't complying with that, you were doing something awfully wrong there. So in my opinion, with that coming more into play, there might be some buzz around that more, but you know, to be honest, I don't think there should. The applications as they exist today or products should have been complying with that for quite a while now.
Okay. Now let's kind of do a little bit of deeper dive into your company just a little bit, but your clients. Do you have any customer success stories that you can share with us on a non-confidential basis or any client testimonials?
Yeah, we're just starting to get some of those on our website. What I can say is that, you know, we can go to one client I kind of think of in particular. They came to us asking for they went to someone else first, I should say, asking for an app. And basically the person said, yes, we can do this. And, you know, it's going to be about $7,000, $10,000 to do this whole thing. They spent all that money and said, okay, here's the designs. Now we need like $50,000 more to even do development on this. So she was just like, okay, that just wasn't honest. That's not, I can't believe I already spent this money. So she came to us and we were able to use Elko App Builder to rapidly get her into the market in just a few weeks' time, well underneath the budget that she was quoted for other people. And we still, you know, we're a for-profit company. We still made our margin, but the difference is that we have this product that helps us. Another example might be, we had a client that all of a sudden wanted to add on a live streaming ability to their product. It was kind of additional scope, and we would have been worried about having to spend all this time basically moving this to potentially even like a microservice architecture, needing to kind of separate out his main features from this other feature and other features to come. But what's really great about our platform is that instead of, again, spending the time, the days or even weeks, spend up this infrastructure, hook that all up, do all that heavy lifting, our developers were able to just click a button, add a component basically add another component, a microservice, and start on that live streaming feature that same day, which is really exciting for us. So, and I suppose I should add to that too, we didn't have to do live streaming, right? There's quite a bit that goes into that, and especially you need to consider from not only a security standpoint, but a lot of things to consider with the infrastructure part of it. And you would typically need some sort of pretty senior level developer to do that. Well, all of ours were allocated to pretty high priority projects, and we were maybe not able to get to this for a few weeks, but the client really wanted it now. So we were able to take one of our more, you know, mid-level developers, and because we had these guardrails in place, because we had this automation in place, our mid-level developer was able to complete this feature without needing a more senior person to do this for them.
Okay, excellent. Now, what's your sweet spot in terms of customers? Is there a certain industry or marketplace that you focus on, or do you pretty much cater to anybody that would need a mobile app created?
You know, we're very open. We definitely have experience in the healthcare area and the education area. We're doing some work with some professional sports teams. So there's
Whoa.
Quite a few different areas. Yeah. excited about that one. So we what's kind of fun about application development is really the processes and the procedures are really all the same no matter where you go. The only exception to that would be if you're in heavy regulation places like HIPAA, or if you're having to concern yourself with PCI.
Excellent. Now, without giving out too much of your secret sauces here, is your product, the EAB, is that a SaaS-based solution? I mean, do you use Azure or AWS to host all these apps at?
Yeah, so it's a SaaS solution that kind of has, I'm going to say, two flavors to it, right? It's one that allows us to host your application ourselves, or you can bring your own infrastructure, and you just use that to provision applications for you. And we use both Heroku and AWS for this. We really love what Heroku can do, kind of abstract away a lot of the work you need to do for spinning up products. So it's between those, and we're looking to expand to places like Google Cloud and Azure, where you can bring your own Azure accounts, and we can spin up applications in there for you.
Okay, excellent. Now, I noticed on your website you got like a client portal. How do you secure that? I mean, I don't want to give obviously too much away, but in general, like, how do you secure customer accounts from cyber attackers and hackers?
Right. Great question. So there's lots to say here, and
well, if you don't want, that's fine. I'm just wondering, like, on a very, very general level, I mean, do you make use of 2FA or MFA, multi-factor authentication? Do you use, like, tokens? I mean, just in very, very general terms.
Right. Yeah. I guess the only high level thing to say there is just, I'm gonna get more general here. The thing with security, right, is that it's not a secret. It's not like the Illuminati, like, and only they hold the secret to knowing what's out there. There's a lot of protocols out there, and very standard ones that you should follow. So we, for that portal and for a lot of things that we do with EAB, especially when it comes to, using other people's AWS accounts to spin up applications for them, we rely very heavily on OAuth-A, or OAuth 2, I should say, to do that, to follow that kind of protocol to make sure that, hey, we are, getting people's tokens, and even if, I don't know how much I should dive in here, but I should say essentially, yeah, we're using that protocol to make sure everything is secured and kind of on the up and up there.
Okay, excellent. Now, how does the EAB make the managing of microservices easier for your clients?
Sure. So what I should talk about here is that it definitely started out as a builder, right? That, hey, this is only used to provision applications. What it has come into is not only something that helps you provision, but helps you manage your applications long term. So what we do is we have a dashboard that shows you kind of everything you need to know about your application all in one spot. If you have a I'm going to say the example of a new developer coming to a project, instead of telling them, oh, hey, you need to go to GitLab to do this, you need to go to AWS, get your account there, you need to go sign Jenkins to do this, what we do is we say, hey, we're taking an opinion on how an application should be built, and here are the different components that are needed to build this application. So you go to this one spot, our dashboard, and you have access to everything that's needed for your application. If I'm a new developer, I click on the button that says, hey, download my source code. It logs you into GitHub, lets you run, it gives you access to that source code. If I need to know, hey, what is going on with my application? I can look at that dashboard and see the logs all aggregated right there. So it helps you, I suppose, instead of having to bounce around to a bunch of different places, gives you one central place to see all that.
Okay, excellent. Now, Paul, one of the big buzzwords, I mean, there are a ton of buzzwords out in cyber right now, but DevOps is a big thing out there. Now, how does mobile app development, EAB, and DevOps kind of all fit together? And can you provide a definition for our audience, really what DevOps is? You know, I'm still kind of mystified by that, what it really all means together.
Sure. So we can start off really with kind of the definition of DevOps, and that's really that DevOps is the bridge, right, between building software, a dev, and kind of making sure that software is running and customers can use it, the operations, right? So really that's about, and it's not just about the tools. There's definitely a technology part, excuse me, in that. And that's where EAB comes into play, and we'll have a lot to say about DevOps and EAB, but DevOps is not just technology. It's the process, it's the people and the culture. So while EAB, you can kind of consider as a, and when I say EAB, I mean the Elko App Builder, you can consider that as a kind of a DevOps as a service or DevOps in a box kind of a tool. It's also about people, process, and culture. So we can't, and as much as I would love to, unless we are there in person, we can't fix that. One example of how I've seen stuff like that done poorly is to have the DevOps team be, hey, they are just you could say like they're the admins, right? They have the access to the passwords and to that stuff. So they're only acting as admins, but what they should really be is making it from a technology standpoint, the ones making the tools to help bridge that gap between the building and the operations. You should also be the people who make sure that the culture and the people are doing that. It's more of a mindset, not a team. One such example is I love it when places have the operations teams, developers, and the QA all at the same table to begin with, right? Hey, they all have a say in how this is going to be built out. You don't have developers building something and throwing it over the wall to the QA team or to the operations and say, all right, now you deal with this. The more ideal situation where you have DevOps as a culture is where you have maybe a developer and the QA person pairing, building out the feature, so they both have a seat at the table when you're building out this product.
Okay, excellent. Now, I know that we've had some numerous talks for our podcast, and you're trying to differentiate Elko more as a product-based company, not just like a development shop, for lack of a better term. What's the difference between the two?
Right. So the development shop is you have someone who is going to be there. You tell them, I want to build this, and they will build that, right? With no kind of questions asked. And we can do that, but we're not interested in just throwing out and building any code. We're interested in building the right stuff, right? Not just any stuff, the right stuff. You know, there's with enough time and money, you can build anything. Anything is possible. Whenever a client asks, hey, is this possible? If you have enough time and money, yes, that is possible. But should it be done? So we don't just have the project managers or the developers. We have the product managers there to help you with understanding, is this the right things to be building? We want to make sure that every minute that we spend with you, we are adding value, not just building any old thing. Does that kind of make sense? Have you any questions on that one?
Well, now, how do you so is that like your main marketing tool that you kind of tell clients, you know, so you're more of a customer, much more of a customer-focused company. So what I'm trying to get is you don't focus more on the quantity of apps that you produce, you focus more on the quality that you produced for your clients, I'm assuming, right?
Right, and it's all about the process and procedures of how do you build a quality product. So we have said to clients, we don't think this is a good idea. Thanks for waiving all this, you know, this big offer, but we think you shouldn't spend 6 months developing all this and then see if something's going to be accepted in the market and this is going to be a big hit. We think you should first prototype, right? Get an MVP out there, a minimum viable product. How do you get something into market quickly to get that feedback and validate your assumptions? So what we really like to do as part of being a product focused shop is to validate that product, get something into market as quickly as possible, see if that's going to work, get that feedback, and then iterate from there.
Okay. Now, finally, Paul, as you wrap up our show, suppose there's a guy or girl that, you know, they're just fresh out of college or they're, you know, in career transition, especially with what's going on right now with COVID, they're looking for something to do something different. And maybe they have great mobile app development skills. Maybe they create a simple mobile app. What recommendations do you give for someone once they want to, like, they want to go full force in the mobile app development career? What's the best route for them to take? And are there any certs that they should take also?
Great question. So the first thing I would say to that is that it's a long journey, right? There's a lot of things to consider. And we've talked really just about, we focused a bit more on security, but that's just one aspect to development, right? There's hundreds of others. So my recommendation is to find something that you're passionate about, find a product, a process, a problem to solve that you're passionate about, because you're going to be spending a ton of time on it. And just by going through that passion, you're going to be the seniority, the experience will come with that. And, you know, honestly, as far as certifications go, and while something like an AWS cert or those things will go a long ways, my recommendation would be find something that you want to build and build it. Try to get that into the App Store, deploy that out into the world. The best way to learn and to become a experienced developer is by doing.
Okay. Are there what's the best way? Should they do like online training, get a book from Amazon, maybe do some coding from that, or maybe work with a mentor? I mean, can you do mentoring services if you have time for interested people that want to like maybe follow in your footsteps, maybe join your company?
Sure. We of course have internships, so I'd recommend talking to local companies about internships. Mentorships is absolutely a thing. I'll say too that, you know, you don't have to go and get a 4-year degree at a college to get software engineering. You know, computer science degree. We have hired a lot of people who have gone to boot camps. Now they're in person, before the COVID thing. But I've been more impressed. I've been very impressed with people who have come out of these boot camps that are 4 months, 6 months, kind of in length. And I've hired them over some people who have gone and spent a 4-year degree at a university. So, and the reason why this kind of comes back to my previous point that at these code camps, they focus on doing products, right? They focus on doing, and that's where they are learning the most and able to contribute immediately to our efforts at Elko. So that's again, kind of the, hey, you're going to learn by doing, get out there and do it, whether it's yourself or you find some sort of code boot camp that will kind of guide you through that process.
Okay. Just in close, two more technical questions I want to ask you. One, what is the most popular code programming language for developing mobile apps? Is it Ruby on Rails, Python, Java, what have you, or is it kind of a mix of everything?
Sure. So when you're talking about developing for mobile apps, we can start out with the front end. code, right? So you have the option to write natively, which used to be, hey, for Android, I have to do it in Java. For iOS, I had to do that in Swift, which was great because your code would, that would be the highest performing way to write an app. You could then alternatively do it as, more of like almost a web app where it would kind of render as a website, but that wasn't as fast. But it was nice because there was one code base. However, what has come out recently, well, I'm going to say somewhat recently, would be, you know, the React Native or the Flutters of the world, where that compiles down to native code. So you get the advantage of having a single code base, but still getting that native performance. That's huge because if you want to add on features or you do a bug fix, you are only having to write that once as opposed to having to go back and forth and write that twice, which would double your time or double your cost if you weren't using React Native or Flutter.
Okay. Now, another, just one last security kind of question I want to ask you is, I've heard both things about Apple and Google, you know, with their mobile app stores, that Apple's a lot more secure than Google because they literally put the development team through the rigors of making sure their source code is secure. You know, they make them sandbox and so forth, where Google is much, much more lax. And I've seen so many stories of where there's so many, like, rogue mobile apps out there. What are your thoughts on that? What would you say for Apple or Google, or in your opinion? They've asked me, well, where should I download this? When I say, oh, Apple, because I think they're more secure. But what are your thoughts on all that?
You know, Apple is much more difficult to submit an app in the App Store. It typically takes more time. They will reject things that Google will not. And, of course, sometimes as developers, they prefer Google only because security can be the inverse to convenience. But with that being said, the things that Apple is able to check is really only that front end. They're not able to see as much that back end. Am I opening up that S3 bucket that all those dating apps had that breach with? Am I doing other things in the back end? Apple doesn't really can't see into that. So either one can have their vulnerabilities, and I don't think in my mind that one is more secure than the other.
Really? Well, okay. Interesting. Okay,
and,
cool.
Yeah, and adding more to that, you know, when we build applications, right, if you're building React Native, again, it's going to be one code base. You're going to have the same front-end mobile app for both Google and the Apple Store. And then furthermore, when you do that, they share the same back-end. So it's really going to be, for when we build apps, they're either both secure or they're both insecure. And that's where, for sure, your scanning comes into play to make sure that they are going to be both secure.
Okay, excellent. Well, Paul, is there anything more you'd like to add on to the show here, like in way of mobile app development, like what you want to tell customers or anything? Is there like a final say-so in there? And if not, how should a customer reach out to you to create their mobile app? What's the best way to reach out to you, phone, email, or going to your website?
For all the above. So we're at www.elko.dev, ELKO.DEV. You can find case studies there, what we do, more about what we're about. So please give us a call. The thing I would say to customers is that it never hurts to have a conversation, right? We absolutely love hearing people's ideas and what they want to do. And so please feel free to reach out and talk to us about that. We'll be there to help guide you along the process and give you our opinions on where you should go.
Okay. Well, Paul, we thank you very much for your time this afternoon. And have a great day. And we look forward to really having you back on some upcoming podcasts here.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Have a great day.
Bye.